All right, welcome everybody to RCFB Talk 38, General Conversation. My name is Bob Akayeri. I'm going to be joined by my co-host, JD, and we're here to listen to what you want to talk about in the college football world. So let me see here. We're loading it up, waiting for JD to get in here. There he is. All right, excellent. So before we get started, I just want to say, as always, we welcome hearing from you. So just please go ahead and hit the request and would love to hear whatever you want to talk about in the college football universe. We are excited that we had that really interesting talk yesterday morning, which is still recorded, with South Carolina coach Shane Beamer. That was a real interesting one. And we've kept that stuck to the top of our Twitter. If you get a chance and you haven't heard it, feel free to listen into that. That was all three of us. JD, what did you think about that conversation?
Oh, man, it was a fantastic and really insightful look at Shane Beamer. I know that we've had on this show many, many times called in. Everybody here is a dark horse fan of the South Carolina Gamecocks, and getting to see everything that we've talked about Shane Beamer in that joy for football, that energetic like personality, that love for the game that we always talk about, to actually hear that from the man himself was absolutely joyful to listen to. Like Bobette said, it's at the very top of our Twitter feed pinned. It's a short little interview, about 30 minutes long, perfect for your commute, headed to work or coming back from work. Strongly recommend it. He gets into literally everything that you could think of. He talks about his team. He talks about his offseason. He talks about expectations coming in and how you deal with success. He talks about the lessons that he learned from, you know, these great coaches like Lincoln Riley, his dad, Kirby Smart, from all these staffs that he's learned from. Just an absolutely incredible and insightful interview. And again, that's been to the top of our page. Strongly recommend taking a listen if you haven't already.
Absolutely. I really enjoy talking to him. You can tell he's obviously on the younger side of being a coach. I mean, 45 doesn't sound that young when you're not. Well, now I'm getting close to that myself, but it doesn't seem that young. But, you know, I guess it's nice to see someone who was comfortable and fun and talkative. I remember I read somebody, I believe from the Greenville newspaper, who said it was, in his mind, also a relief to sit down and talk with Shane Beamer because he didn't have the death stare that Mullen was known for. But sounded real fun there. I don't know. Well, you know, we already have someone who wants to just talk. So as I said, if you want to come and talk, just hit request. So let's see here. Colin, what's up? It's still connecting, so that's not on your end. I'm literally watching the spinning ball of not spinning ball. Whatever you call that thing.
The load. As a reminder, always, if you want to request, do request from the app. Twitter is not necessarily as supportive if you try to do it off of a desktop computer or a laptop. But if you've got your phone out and you've got the app up and live, that's the best way to connect in and avoid any kind of technical difficulties. But as we're waiting for Colin, Bobak, what have been some of the other things that you've seen in college football recently that's caught your eye?
You know, we're in the middle of the off season, so a lot of the conversation topics that come up tend to get a little absurd and in some ways quite funny. And one of the ones I was enjoying earlier was because obviously right now we've got the College World Series happening in baseball. So people were just sort of trying to come up with conversation topics. So one of the interesting ones I thought was if the college football national championship game was held annually in the same location, in the same way Omaha holds the College World Series hostage. I'm sorry. No, I'm joking. But, you know, if it were in one place the whole time, where would you want it to be? And you know, there were some classics like, you know, always have it in the Rose Bowl or perhaps somewhere in Texas, maybe Jerry World, somewhere where it's central. But it was interesting to see some of the funnier ones. I mean, somebody, you know, and this one wasn't necessarily meant as a negative, was obviously Hawaii, because then the loser gets to spend time there. Of course, you know, Aloha Stadium is now not going to be working out, so I don't know if they'd have to hold it at TC Ching, which is not a very big venue right now on the Hawaii campus. But my favorite was the counter to that was to have the national championship every year at FedEx Field, in Landover, because even the winner gets to spend time there, so it's a lose-lose prospect. How about you, JD? What are some of the topics you found interesting?
Oh, man. Well, first off, before we get into other topics, first and foremost, the Kibbe Dome or we riot in terms of where we need to put the national championship every single year. Put it up in Moscow, Idaho. Put it in that beautiful dome up in the Kibbe Dome. Make that the national championship game. That's going to be my answer for that, just for the delightful joke on that. But in terms of highlights and news from earlier this week, you brought up the College World Series. I am super amped about that. I'll be heading up there for the finals coming up on Friday here. But I'm really excited to see, you know, the atmosphere and, you know, Omaha actually is a gorgeous place to put the College World Series. I absolutely love the entire setup that they have up in Nebraska. Thoroughly, thoroughly excited to see that. But in college football news, I did find it incredibly interesting. This recent report from ESPN's chairman, that's Jimmy Pitaro, stating that the Longhorns and the Sooners will be staying in the Big 12 until 2025, announcing some of the TV inventory that's going to be coming out over the next couple of years. I find that very, very interesting, especially knowing that, you know, we're going to see Cincinnati, we're going to see BYU, we're going to see UCF, we're going to see these teams doing all of this realignment in 2023 and all the ripples after that. So, you know, UTSA is going to go from Conference USA to the American. We're going to see teams going from the FCS up into Conference USA. All of that is happening in 2023, but the move that started all of that, funny enough, is going to be Oklahoma and Texas, but they're still going to be holding out until 2025. I think it's going to be incredibly fun to watch the Big 12 in 2023 and 2024 with that expanded roster of teams.
Absolutely, and it certainly makes it seem like, as somebody said in the discussion for that, the malice is the one pulling the strings in so much of this. And it looks like Colin got dropped, so that's no problem. Harry, let's go ahead and reach out to you. I'm going to send you a speaker request. And by the way, JD, if you go up to Omaha, are you going to grab some Jello shots? And if you are, what team are you going to credit for them?
I am absolutely going to run to Rocco's to get me a couple of Jello shots, which if you have not seen that already, this is an annual tradition that's held at Rocco's. It's a pizzeria and bar that is right next door to the stadium. And every single year, some team puts out an ungodly amount of Jello shots. Last year, it was Mississippi State with just shy of 3,000. This year, Ole Miss and Arkansas have both cleared 4,000 Jello shots in the handful of days that the College World Series has already been happening. But as we continue to go on, we see this insane amount of competition between the eight schools that are up there to get the Jello shots. I believe that's a CSW Jello Tracker. Somebody please correct me if I'm wrong, if that's the Twitter handle. But yes, I will be going to Rocco's. Yes, I will be getting some shots. Yes, I will be making sure that Stanford does not stay stuck in the cellar.
Oh, I'm sure Bacon is going to be really happy about that. One of our fellow moderators who is one of the trees. That would be... That'll be interesting. I don't know. And by the way, those are not cheap shots. They're like $4.50 for a Jello shot. So somebody did the math real quick.
No, it is highway robbery.
They are making a huge chunk of money on this, which I don't blame them. I mean, you know, the College World Series is a big event. Obviously, they're right next to that stadium. So I'm sure it's like, you know, out here in Minnesota, and I'm sure in other places too, the fair, you know, there's some places that all they do is they make all their money in like those few weeks that the fair goes on. And I think Rocco certainly probably gets a huge bump from the College World Series. Harry, you've been really patient. And I know. And again, if anyone else wants to join us, please hit request. What's up?
What's going on, guys? Obviously, I'm a little bit more into the college baseball right now, being a Sooner fan. But as far as football is concerned, I'm really excited for the season coming up with Brent Venables and all. I'll start with what you guys were talking about and having kind of a centrally located national championship. I like that idea. You know, for softball, we have it here in Oklahoma City, and it is awesome. And it's rocking every year, obviously, with
Omaha.
With Omaha, it's rocking every year. I think that if you try to do it for basketball and the other two major sports, basketball and football, I think that would be an awesome idea. Two of them that I really thought of to get this conversation started would be either Indianapolis, obviously, with the Colts, and because that is where the NCAA is located, or the College Football Hall of Fame has now been moved to Atlanta, Georgia. And that is a beautiful stadium. I'd like to completely forget about the game that we played there against LSU. But as far as the stadium itself, it is a beautiful stadium. It's a nice stadium. And, you know, those would be two good ideas, and they would be centrally located.
You know, I covered the national championship this year in Indianapolis, and I would lean more towards Atlanta or even New Orleans, frankly, only because I think those cities tend to be a little bit more fun for neutral fans, particularly in winter. That was really funny. I mean, again, as I've said, I just said I live in Minnesota, so going down there was like going down to summer in January. But but I'm going to tell you, all those folks from Alabama and Georgia were not enjoying that that really blustery, cold rain. You know, although it's nice they have that convention center right next door, so they just put most of what would have been outdoor events in that giant convention center. But I don't know, I feel some sympathy towards people from warmer climates because I grew up in Southern California. So I would probably lean more towards Atlanta in that situation, although the Superdome, I mean, any excuse to be in New Orleans is a good excuse in my mind. Or, you know, if you wanted to vary it up, you know, Vegas is always a fun place. There's always stuff to do. Particularly, you know, once you're out of college, typically you're of the right age to enjoy Vegas for the rest of your days. But those are some fun ideas, though. And again, it was just sort of a fun little off-season exercise. But I was glad to hear. I'm glad to hear those thoughts. Gosh, what do you think, JD? What might be some other options?
I mean, if we're going to keep naming off some of the big ones, Miami is always going to be a popular option. Put it on the beach in the wintertime, big destination, big international airport, easy to travel in and out. Love the New Orleans recommendation. I also wouldn't be opposed to something like a Charlotte, putting it somewhere out on the East Coast, giving it in a large stadium, has the infrastructure to support all that. But Harry, again, I think with your suggestion, especially with Indianapolis, I know there's probably about 1,000 sports writers with their Marriott points who rejoiced at that. But I would absolutely love to see it in Atlanta as well. The College Football Hall of Fame, you are spot on in terms of it being a huge destination for college football. You are right in the heart of one of the biggest, craziest college football loving communities in the world. And it's an incredible place to experience that kind of highfalutin game.
You know, just to add to Indianapolis, as Harry mentioned, it's near the NCAA, but with the way things are going, I don't know if college football, especially the FBS and particularly the P5 want to be near it quite as much anymore. If anything, they want to kind of, go a little bit maybe away from that. So Harry, what else did you want to talk about?
As far as me in particular, I would love to talk about my Sooners. Obviously, everybody's excited about what's happening tomorrow in the next couple of days. But man, in the next couple of months, this is going to get crazy. It's going to get nuts. I'm really looking forward to what they have coming in. I met up with Venables again a couple of weeks ago at one of the softball tournaments. He's an awesome guy. It sounds like he's ready to go. I'm ready to go. And, Lincoln kind of pulled the plug on the caravans. Well, Brent pulled them back in. And when I went to the one here in Oklahoma City, man, I'm telling you this right now, guys. Everything that you hear, I even heard it from Baker Mayfield when they did the Heisman presentation. And, man, I'm ready to run through a wall for this guy. I can see that, I feel that emotion. And, you know, at this point, he's talking to boosters. He's not talking to players. At that point, at those conventions, at those caravans, he's talking to the fans. He's not talking about the student, to the players. He's talking to the fans. And even as a fan, I'm ready to run through the wall for this guy. I'm excited to have him back, and I'm ready to go.
I completely get that sentiment, especially with this change in regime. I know that Lincoln Riley was very much beloved during his time, especially when he was having his success. But I would say that your experience is not one-off. I've seen such an incredible amount of love from Oklahoma fans who have absolutely loved this new change, how much Brent Venables has bought into the program. Like, I distinctly remember being at the Alamo Bowl this last year. They ended up winning that game. And the just complete fan sentiment, whether you were talking to people at the tailgates, whether you were partaking in the post-game confetti, you were talking to people in the stands, everybody was so amped for Brent Venables and how much he has bought into this program, how much he's known that he's with this program. And again, this is a guy who had a lot of head coaching offers for a very long time. He was a defensive coordinator at a national power for a very long time, took his time to pick a job, and he decided Oklahoma was the place that he wanted to get that first head coaching job. I think it is going to be very interesting to see that change in dynamic, to go from a really big offensive powerhouse where Lincoln Riley is known for getting Heisman quarterbacks, first overall selections at quarterback, big high-flying offenses. And now we've got a defensive guy, how they adjust to that change, especially with Jeff Lebby coming in. We've got a quarterback situation where you got pretty much a brand new quarterback room. I think that's going to be incredibly exciting. But when you look at this schedule, you start off with UTEP, you got Kent State, you got Nebraska, where Scott Frost is trying to coach for his life. Then you start to work up with Kansas State. TCU's got a brand new head coach. You've got Red River with Steve Sarkisian. We're going to see if he's going to be coaching for his job next year. You got Kansas after that. That's a relatively decent schedule to kind of break in a brand new first-time head coach, especially when he's got the resources that Oklahoma has. Bobak, I know that you've thought a lot about this hire as well. What are your first impressions when you start to hear, not just like Harry's response of how he's been a little bit more personable, but what else have you noticed with Brent Venables?
Well, I mean, Harry is a great example of that. He's got everyone really excited. I mean, and that's huge. That you can't, you know, there are some coaches who really don't do a good job of getting the fans and the boosters and really the program hyped up. I mean, the classic example, I think, was Charlie Weiss when he reappeared in Kansas. I mean, no one was excited about that. So I think that's going to be a big part of it. You know, one of the things I'm really curious to see, especially, obviously, he's a defensive coach. You know, his career has been based around that. He spent all that time at Clemson, and Ted Roof is now his defensive coordinator. I always get curious about how that dynamic goes, because Ted Roof, he's been great, he's been bad. We'll just set aside the head coaching attempt he had, because some guys, you know, it's a classic. I've said it before, I'm a big believer in the business idea of the Peter principle, where you get promoted by your talent until you finally reach a job that you're incompetent at. So your competence gets you to the point where you're promoted to a job where you're incompetent. So that was Ted Roof as a head coach at Duke. But, you know, at the same time, he's bounced around. He was a defensive analyst for Clemson last year. So I'm curious to see how that dynamic works out and how much control Venables is going to have over him. You know, again, not to draw an analogy again to USC, but back in the day when Pete Carroll got there, that was kind of the joke. Like, well, whoever the defensive coordinator was more or less an assistant to Pete Carroll, who is still a very defensive-minded guy. And then over the years, eventually, he kind of developed in a more independent defensive coordinator into the Trojans. So I wonder if we're going to see a bit of that as well at Oklahoma. But obviously, you know, Ted Roof is an independent guy. I mean, he has, as we've said, he's been a defensive coordinator and head coach in his own right. So I'm kind of curious to see that dynamic. And when it comes to what Oklahoma has against it, on the schedule, I mean, is Baylor their biggest challenge? What do you think, you know, JD? Or Harry, actually, Harry, let's bounce it back to you. Who do you think is going to be the biggest challenge for Oklahoma this season? Because I think they're going to be strong no matter what. Every team like this, where they've been, you know, just great, and then a coach unexpectedly leaves, the next head coach usually gets quite a few tools regardless of how they do until they really get a chance to develop out the program in their own direction.
Sure. I'll tell you this, the game that really, really sticks out to me probably would have been Iowa State, but now that it's going to be kind of a Saturday game slate, the game that really, really, really shines about me right now is a game that's going to be played in Norman. And it will actually be a week before what you would call quote unquote rivalry week, that last regular season game of the season. And Oklahoma State always, always comes to Norman to play. I'll never forget the two overtime games that I got to see him play. Well, actually three overtime games that I got to see him play in. Landry Jones's overtime game, the overtime game to where we didn't have Baker or Trevor, and they had who is it that plays there for the Miami Dolphins now? Wide receiver, defensive back. Tyreek Hill. And then the corn dog game when Cornelius and Kyler just went back to back to back to back. I still don't know why he went for the 2-point conversion at the end of that ball game. I would have kicked him 1 point and then see what happens in overtime. But then again, you're talking about going up probably against one of, if not the greatest quarterback to ever play at Oklahoma, as far as accuracy, speed, everything together, kind of like a Jamal Holloway kind of S kind of a guy. So with all that being said, yeah, that Oklahoma State game, man, that game right there. And I know that they lost a lot of their defensive guys, and I know that they lost their defensive coordinator, but you know that it's going to be their, probably more than likely, as you guys have been talking about, it's going to be their last trip to Norman here for a while, probably here for a long while. They're going to want to make a statement. And if you're never, ever going to go back to a stadium for now, for the foreseeable future, and you go in and you kick their rear end, you never know. And that, and you know, who says that defense can't get better as time goes on? That's going to be the last home game of the season. That's going to be the second to last regular season game for both teams. We'll see what happens in Norman. But that game against Oklahoma State, that just signals to me that that's just going to be a fun game to be at.
Oh, no doubt.
It can go either way.
Be great. But yeah, no, I think, and you said my immediate thoughts, which, well, you know, it's going to be towards the end of the season. So we'll see if the Cowboys can reload that defense heading into that game for sure. Well, thanks, Harry. It was really great to hear from you. That was a nice conversation on, neutral sides, Oklahoma. Hey, Charlie, we've been patient. We'd love to hear from you.
Hey, how's it going? Good. Howdy from Dallas, Texas. Good to be
here.
Howdy,
howdy.
So I heard Harry talking about OU. Obviously, we've got the big game tomorrow, a little rematch action. And it is baseball season, but I was kind of wondering, Harry, any other speak on this? Whenever OU and Texas roll on over to the SEC, I was wondering if there, you know, there might be a sleeper rivalry between A&M and OU brewing a little bit, just with tomorrow and, OU right now, they're the better team, and A&M better team than Texas. So I was wondering what y'all's thoughts were on that.
Well, as we all quickly try to unmute. So I think first and foremost, Texas A&M and Oklahoma have the long history in the Big 12 together. And there's been plenty of bad blood between the two schools. I mean, I immediately think of the 77-0 Dennis Franchione game between Oklahoma
and
A&M.
Oh, yeah. I knew it was coming.
And then, of course, I also think immediately to Johnny Manziel absolutely destroying the Oklahoma defense during the Cotton Bowl. So there has been plenty of advantages on both sides. There's been a long history between the two. I know that when, you know, Texas comes into the conference, there's going to be a strong connection with Texas and Texas A&M, Texas and Arkansas. They're going to continue the rivalry with Oklahoma. But Texas A&M, I think one of the big things that they kind of lost when they went into the SEC was they didn't have a natural rival. They've kind of had this thing with Oklahoma or with a Arkansas matchup in Jerry World, but it's a neutral site game, and it's not at the same caliber as a Texas OU neutral site or a world's largest cocktail party like with Florida, Georgia. It's kind of always been one that's been manufactured, and we've kind of started to see a little bit of a rivalry budding between Texas A&M and LSU. obviously, with the most recent comments between Jimbo Fisher and Nick Saban, we're seeing a little bit of growth when it comes to Texas A&M and Alabama. But when Oklahoma comes into the conference, I fully anticipate Texas A&M is going to be one of their chief rivals. And I think there's going to be no memories forgotten of all the battles in the Big 12. They're going to be competing for the same guys in recruiting. And they're still going to be doing all those different fights on the gridiron. And I'm very confident that Texas A&M and Oklahoma will have several interesting contests in the years to come in the SEC. Babak, what are your thoughts on that?
You know, I agree with a lot of what you said, but I was kind of, if Texas and Oklahoma weren't coming over, I was enjoying this role Texas A&M was starting to become, which is more like the really, I think about The Simpsons, like the rich Texan cliche, you know, the annoying rich Texan at the edge of the SEC, just starting to spend crazy sums of money and just kind of lay out that Texas pride and ego, which is delightful, by the way. I'm not saying that as an insult, you know, and just starting to really perturb and annoy the establishment in the SEC. So I was, if Texas and Oklahoma weren't coming, I was actually kind of enjoying this attitude that Texas A&M was starting to bring to the table. And I think to an extent, thanks to NIL and thanks to the portal making the NIL more lucrative, but I agree. I mean, it's hard not to see those rivalries forming, and I think it's going to be natural geographically. It's going to, it's going to be a lot of excitement. I mean, as we now know, ESPN has told us that they appear to be in that conference for at least, I mean, they're going to be stuck in the big, well, stuck, pardon me, but they're going to be in the Big 12 for at least a few more seasons. So, it's going to, that hype is just going to build, and I think it's going to build and build. So it's going to be at a nice crescendo several seasons from now when we get a chance to finally see that play out. So, I mean, I'm looking forward to it. I mean, Harry, Charlie, I mean, you guys are OU fans. How big is this all for you guys?
Oh, even from a fan's perspective, guys, it's awesome. And you guys have been talking about it all day. But one of the keys to this quote-unquote rivalry that y'all aren't even considering is what I believe might happen my junior, senior year at Oklahoma.
I'm not even going to call it a fabulous. He was coming off of an okay redshirt freshman season. Had a couple bumps and bruises there, but, you know, my senior year, our entire line was gone. Our receivers were gone. Everybody was gone. Around conference play, we figured it out. Got a win there in Lincoln. Somehow lost in Lubbock. I still don't see how that happened, but oh well. Bygones be bygones. Got a bowl win against Oregon. And then some stuff started happening off the field. And who is it that comes out with the information about Rhett Bomar and J.D. Quinn? It wasn't Texas. It wasn't Oklahoma State. It wasn't TCU. It was Texas A&M. And who was it that broke the news about the SEC and about the move? It wasn't Texas. It wasn't TCU. It was Texas A&M. They're not afraid. They're not afraid of anybody. They're not afraid of anything. And on the football field, I will absolutely never forget my freshman year at Oklahoma. We are cruising for a bruising for the Big 12 championship. We're heading out 6-0, 7-0. We just beaten Texas. We're looking really good. And I'm saying, boys, let's just go on to College Station. It's going to be fun. It's going to be a good environment. They don't even know what they're going to do at quarterback. We're okay if Nate Hibble, who is the son of the golf coach, or brother of the golf coach, Ryan Hibble, but if Nate can play the way that he can play, we'll be okay. Let's go down to College Station. And we all know what happened then. That was the Reggie McNeil game. And that was not so much fun. Now, my sophomore year in the rain, that was a lot of fun. 77-0. And then the next year we go back. I say, you know what? I got it. You know what? I had so much fun. What if we actually go down there and win? So I went the third year, and that was the year that Reggie and Jason just decided to go back and forth. and nobody wanted to lose. And luckily, we had a freshman named Adrian Peterson, who really wasn't going to lose. And what a lot of people don't understand in that game, Charlie, if you'll remember going all the way back there, he was hurt. Y'all heard it. But he said, you know what, I might be a little nicked up, but you're not taking me out. And he carries us to that victory in College Station, which is not easy, an easy place to win. A couple years later, we take a really, really, really good team. I think we still ended up winning the Big 12 that year with Landry Jones. We played Nebraska in the Big 12 championship. We went out to A&M that year. And like I said, Big 12 champions, a really good team. And somehow A&M gets the best of Oklahoma again. So, I mean, it's going to be a lot of fun. And I'm really looking forward to that one. And to be honest, I'm ready to play them again. I really am. I don't know how everybody else feels, but I know I am.
Charlie, where are you?
Yeah, this will give away. Yeah, this will give away my age a little bit, but I'm more familiar with Adrian Peterson in the fantasy football world than I am in college.
Oh, no. No, that's just making me feel old.
I was afraid it might, but yeah. And then I don't know if you said this, I think I cut out for a little bit, but talking about, you know, things that support the rivalry, like the Kyler Murray transfer, things like that.
Oh, yeah, I didn't even mention that. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And that just comes to mind as, you know, it was one of those times where it was the big quarterback debacle at A&M. Like, we had 3 5 stars on the roster and or something like that, and lost them all within like 6 months. And yeah, so I mean, it makes me excited to see Oklahoma come over to the SEC. I mean, it's like, yeah, I can't remember who it was, if it was our AD, Mr. Bjork, saying, oh, the first A&M Texas game is going to be at home. And it seems like all the attention is on that. But I'm excited to see the Sooners and my Aggies play, and just kind of, yeah, what brews there. Because like I said before, it seems like that's like, you know, it's going to be better competition, at least at first, between Aggie Sooners or Sooners Longhorns. So, yeah. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on, guys. That was a real good conversation there. If I wanted to make us feel really old, I would talk about the fact that was the game recorded on Betamax, which I don't know. It's so fun. I was just talking to somebody who had no idea what I was even talking about with that kind of a joke. But Noah, hey, what's up, man? We'd love to hear what you got to say. And if any of you want to join us here on RCFB Talk, just feel free to hit request. We'd love to hear from you.
What's going on, everyone? Hope everyone's doing well today. Just wanted to talk some G5 football for a second, switch gears a little bit. It's the end of an era. The American and CUSA, the last season before everything changes. And we got a brand new conference in the Sun Belt, 4 new teams coming in. So wanted everyone's opinion, how we're looking at this new Sun Belt, who's winning the East, who's winning the West. And what's kind of the last main hurrah for these 3 teams leaving the American to the Big 12 and these 6 teams leaving CUSA for the American?
That's a lot to talk about there. But I think easily the Sun Belt seems to, in my opinion, come out the winner, especially across, gosh, the last 10 years or so. Just changes in the college football world, because 10 years ago, maybe a little more, the Sun Belt was always kind of the bottom, the absolute, you know, never, it wasn't held in high regard. It was kind of the land of misfit toys because they had, you know, football only members, you know, Idaho and New Mexico State that were kind of in there, not really fitting, and were eventually booted out when they brought on App State and Coastal. So, you know, I think they started a shift, and it was interesting because I do remember they were the first conference where we as a website started covering their media days in person back in 2015. And I remember I was actually kind of impressed by their attitude towards it, because they were staying in a very much like, we're just going to stick to what works. We're going to stick to our ESPN deal. We're just going to sail on through while you'd hear, for example, at Mountain West Media Day, or, you know, sometimes even Conference USA Media Day, it would be a little bit more like, hey, we're going to try this, we're going to try that. Sunbelt was just kind of quietly going through and just counting on the fact that ESPN was going to be their long-term bet. And it really, I think, worked out because they had a decent TV situation. There were no weird games going on with any of it. They just had a steady relationship with a good content provider. And I think what we're seeing now, I mean, really the weak part, I think, in the Sun Belt at this point, and it's going to change pretty quick, is they don't have necessarily the best bowl setup. And that's always been kind of a long-term issue. They were adding bowls as quickly as they could several years ago, again, trying to please a conference that had spread out pretty far because you had Texas State way out west. And then, you know, you had, of course, you know, schools like Coastal that are also pretty far out to the east. But I think they've got a good position. Now, I don't know going into next season if we're going to see James Madison and Marshall necessarily challenge everything. I don't expect them to be weak. I'm not sure who I would peg to necessarily take it all. I mean, it's always an interesting conference. I mean, I assume it's going to be Coastal's to an extent to lose because I think they're going to still be a very strong program. But they're going to be exciting to watch, that's for sure, because we get them pretty much loaded almost immediately. Now, Conference USA, boy, is that going to be interesting. I mean, this is a really awkward time considering the conference isn't going to look all that great in a few seasons. You know, I know you're an FAU fan yourself, so I can't help but wonder. I think there's a good chance we're going to see FAU go to at least get bowl eligible. I think their schedule is quite reasonable in that regard. But, gosh, there's so much to go. JD, what are your thoughts on this? Because this is a really generalized G5 question.
Yeah, sure. So let's go ahead and just first start off with the changeup. I know, Noah, you're a FAU guy, and I'm really excited to see FAU moving into the American. I think that's a possibility for them to really start making some noise, especially if they are in the East Division, as presumably they would be. I think this is going to be an opportunity where it's going to be a very West-heavy conference because you're going to have, like, your teams like Memphis. You're going to have SMU. You're going to have UTSA, which is also up on the rise, and they're going to all be clustered in this one specific region. I'm sure UAB is also going to be in the West, but FAU, I mean, East Carolina, still struggling to try to be a bowl-consistent team. Navy, they've had their ups and downs. South Florida, still really rebuilding under Jeff Scott. Temple, all these other teams that are out there in the East, you've got a lot of opportunity for FAU to kind of just come in and effective in 2023 have the opportunity to really make a lot of noise in that conference, especially when you have all the recruiting ties, down in the South Florida region, when you have the resources that the program seems to be willing to put into their players, into their coaches, into their facilities. I think it's a really good opportunity for FAU to kind of fill in a void that might be missing with these bigger teams like a UCF and a Cincinnati leaving that conference. And I think it's a really, really great opportunity for the Owls. Now, in terms of the overall picture, you mentioned the Sun Belt. I'm currently doing my grad school at Texas State. God bless them. Jake Spavital is trying. But I think out in that conference, that's one where the East is so strong with App State, Coastal Carolina. You have James Madison, who has always been an FCS power transitioning up. They're the one that I'm the most interested to see because this is a team that very consistently was in the Final Four. They had a national championship at the FCS level. How they scale up with their scholarships and actually try to compete in FBS football, I think that transition is going to be incredibly interesting to watch. And especially when they've got teams like Coastal Carolina, which seems to keep doing an incredible pace as long as Jamie Chadwell is there. You've got App State, which has been showing itself as a very strong G5. You've got teams that are even rising up, like Georgia State out there. You've got Marshall out there, which is always a tough out. I think the Sun Belt East is going to be a very interesting place to watch in G5 over the next few years to come. Sun Belt West, Not 100% sure and confident on that. I mean, Texas State has been struggling. Arkansas State, I don't think that Butch Jones hire has been as good as they want. Troy has been struggling ever since Neil Brown left for the West Virginia jobs. Southern Miss, South Alabama, they've been struggling. Louisiana, Lafayette just lost their fantastic head coach, Billy Napier, off to the Florida program. And then at ULM, you've got one of the Bowden sons. Who's there and in charge. And so I think that's really just kind of like a quagmire of we're not really sure of which team can rise up, especially when you got so much heavy talent in the Sun Belt East. But overall, though, I'm really excited to see G5. I think even with realignment, I think really the only loser is CUSA. Because they're losing some of their programs that were really big. I mean, losing UTSA is a huge loss for CUSA. Losing Marshall is a loss for the conference. And then trying to have to kind of scramble and try to get anybody else that they can. I know that they've got Sam Houston going up from FCS up to FBS. Looking at teams like New Mexico State, Liberty, just trying to scrabble something together for a conference. I think CUSA kind of stands to be the lowest on the totem pole when it comes to G5 programs. But I think the Sun Belt is in fantastic shape. I think the New American is going to be in wonderful shape for G5 football. And I think the best days of G5 football are still ahead. We've seen so much investment from these programs. We've seen so much care from these fan bases. I think G5 football is still very much in good hands going forward.
You know, and I just Mountain West is always one I and it's funny because of all the moves, I don't know if the Mountain West gets as much talk. This is like their season to be kind of under the radar. I'm not sure if any of those teams are necessarily going to make a national splash, at least, you know, challenging to be the next Cincinnati. But, you know, I think we're going to see the classic Boise State, you know, dominating or at least being the team to beat. In their division, yeah, Mountain. I always forget how they divide them up. It's the Mountain and the not Mountain. No, the West. But you know, and you know, Air Force, I think, is going to be their biggest challenger. And Utah State, I like Blake Anderson, what he's doing there. So he knows how to coach. So I could see that. Now, I think definitely in the West, everyone's excited about Fresno State, especially with Tedford back there. So I think Fresno State's going to be potentially the most interesting team. You know, we'll get a real good test of Fresno State because they go and play USC, which is a team they always play hard. I talked about that a lot, that classic 2005 game. But the I think Fresno State's going to be good, and you can't – again, San Diego State, solid program. I don't know where they're going to be this season. The punt god is no longer there, if I recall. I think he – did he go to the draft? JD, did he go to the draft, or did he not? Punt god.
Yes, he did. He is now a member of the Buffalo Bills.
Yeah, they're going to be mortal in special teams, but Brady Hoke is a good coach, so we'll see where that goes. And I think the wild card there might be San Jose State, at least in the West. But, you know, I think there's going to be some excitement in the G5, especially right now. So, Noah, I mean, what are your thoughts? I mean, thanks again for bringing this up. It's such a huge topic. How are you feeling about FAU? Let's get specific here. What do you think? How do you think the Owls are going to be?
It's going to be interesting year. It's going to be interesting for sure. One thing you can always count on, the Owls, they are never going to go and keep you bored. They're always going to go and surprise you. I think Willie has reloaded up enough of the spots and gaps that we need to go and succeed. It's going to be an interesting year. No divisions. Everyone plays everybody. And top two make it in. I think the three favorites right now, four favorites if we count FAU, UTSA, UAB, Western Kentucky. I think it comes down to those four. And we'll throw in Charlotte as a sleeper because you can never always count out Charlotte. FAU opens up week zero versus Charlotte in Football in Paradise, Boca Raton. I think it's going to go and be interesting. Considering another interesting matchup we got going on, Houston versus UTSA in the Dome in San Antonio. That's going to be interesting. And I think that's one to look forward to. I think that's week one or week two. And yeah, going off of that, it's the last year. So It would be nice to go and make it to a bowl game. It would be nicer to go and leave CUSA with another ring, moving on strong into the American. And like you mentioned, I believe that the three strongest programs going into this CUSA to American transition are FAU, UAB, San Antonio. Location, location, location. How much all these teams have put into their facilities. UAB literally came back from the dead and won two CUSA championships. FAU has won two CUSA championships. And UTSA has come back strong and won a CUSA championship. I think they can all make moves in the American. It's going to be interesting to see how everything pans out, especially if Memphis and UAB end up in the East. That's going to be very interesting. And I think the next argument is who's moving up next. I mean, USF is starting to go and light a fire under itself and try and go and build up their facilities. SMU's in the conversation. Memphis is in the conversation. Boise State is in the conversation. It's going to be interesting to see because I don't think expansion's over anytime soon.
That was a great point. We really appreciate you joining us, Noah. Thanks for your thoughts on all of this. So let's see here. Dak, I think I'm pronouncing that right. Thanks for your patience. What did you want to talk about?
Oh, I don't know. I'm a big Mizzou guy. I just wondered if anybody had any thoughts on Mizzou this season. You got Eli coming in. He's got a couple hot recruits, especially some new guys that could possibly make a day one difference, possibly. Mizzou's been burned on that in the past. But, you know, I realistically, you know, what is his hot seat number? How many games does he have to win? You know, this is sort of his year. He's got, you know, he's got his recruits coming up through his system now. You know, how many wins is, does Eli need to get to you know, be sort of comfortable? You know, I think most Mizzou fans are thinking wildly, you know, he needs 7 wins. Realistically, I'd take 6 in a bowl game win. But I was just interested to hear anybody's thoughts possibly on Eli Drinkwitz, what number he's got to hit to keep that hot seat cool, if you know what I mean.
So for Eli Drinkwitz, I don't think he's necessarily as big of a hot seat as, you know, other coaches around the country. I think Scott Frost obviously is in the hottest seat out of anybody in the country. Jeff Collins at Georgia Tech, he's in an absolutely on fire seat. I think Steve Sarkisian, if he puts up another 5-7 season, he might be on his way out in Texas. But when it comes to Eli Drinkwitz, like, I think unless they're doing something like just a horrific 3 or 4 win season, I think he's pretty safe to keep the job. And I think one of the huge ones is, you know, if you make sure that he keeps Luther Burden, who is one of the best wide receivers in the country. He's a Missouri native out of St. Louis, East St. Louis specifically. He's the number one receiver in the country. He's one of the top 5 recruits in the country. The fact that he locked into Mizzou early and he stayed on there, I think as long as he still makes it to campus, I think that's going to buy Drinkwitz quite a good amount of time. You've also got huge guys who have come in. He's plucking guys out of North Carolina like Xavier Simmons. He's pulling guys out of Texas like Marcus Scott. And like right now, he's got a top 20 recruiting class, which you obviously need that if you want to compete in the SEC. But especially if you're Mizzou, that is a huge thing that you didn't see with a Barry Odom. You didn't see that with a late stage Gary Pinkel. You didn't see teams that were climbing up in the top 15. Like right now, On3 has them, I believe, there it is, number 16 in the country right now. You didn't see that with previous Missouri regimes. And I think as long as he keeps up that pretty consistent, gets 7 wins, gets into a decent bowl game, I don't think anybody's necessarily expecting Missouri to win SEC East titles. I don't think anybody is expecting them to necessarily compete for New Year's 6 bowls. Obviously, if Drinkwitz pulls that off, he's going to get a very nice extension. But I think for that with Mizzou, I think as long as he continues the really high stellar recruiting and he gets a good, solid bowl game this year, I think he's absolutely fine in terms of his contract.
Go ahead.
Yeah, well, we need to win those non-conference games. That's been a big sticking point in the past. Is, you know, we've dropped 1-2 of those non-conference games against opponents, which we shouldn't be dropping against in the past, you know, 5 years. And I think that's a big contributing factor to why some of the, you know, Mizzou talk people are a little worried this coming season that, you know, he may be in the hot seat. And I'm totally agree with you. I don't think he's remotely close to the hot seat. But I think you got to start out at least this year by winning at least three of those non-conference games. Got to be aiming for four there.
Yeah, I think three of those are probably the most reasonable. I mean, because you got Louisiana Tech, Abilene Christian, an FCS program, and New Mexico State. Kansas State might be the tallest order because I think that's a program in the Big 12 that in some ways is looking to kind of finally prove itself to be that next step. So I think that's going to be actually really intriguing non-conference game in week two, one that would be kind of a little more not necessarily on everyone's radar because they aren't exactly, you know, two teams that everyone preseason are expecting to challenge for a national championship or anything like that. But I think those two programs, just see how they stack up. I'd be curious to see how Kansas State and Missouri go about it. But, you know, I think Drink does a good job of setting up a good program, though. I mean, the problem is, you know, if you're running a program, quote unquote, the right way, building a good foundation, that's great, but wins are what it comes down to. So, you know, I think you've hit the nail on the head, winning majority of those non-conference games and hopefully all of them, and then making a real good kind of play through the SEC. Because, I mean, you know, as much as we've been enjoying talking about South Carolina, that's going to be a program that Mizzou is also going to be, you know, in its own division, really kind of stacking itself up against to see where they are. And Kentucky, of course, and then obviously, you know, they hopefully would dispatch Vandy with you know, yeah, they're Vanderbilt. So, and then maybe see what they can do against, you know, Auburn, Georgia, Florida. Crazier things have happened against somebody like Georgia, you know. So I think it's plausible. But you're right. We don't get a sense of that until the games start to get played there. But how about you, Beck? Where are you feeling about Mizzou heading into this season? Oh, looks like that did not quite go. All right. Well, hey, Thack, thanks so much for joining us. We appreciate it. And, hey, Mr. PJ, that was the way that came up. It almost sounds like I was about to go into start rhyming or something. But what are your thoughts?
Hey, man, you mentioned Sarkisian at UT. Do you really think if they went 5-7, he'd be on the hot seat? And who would they replace him with if they were to fire him?
I will absolutely say this first and foremost: if he goes 5-7 and he loses to Kansas a second time, he's getting fired. End of story. If you are at the University of Texas, you are not supposed to lose games to Kansas. You're not supposed to blow 30-point leads against Oklahoma. You're not supposed to go a full NFL draft without a single player. Steve Sarkisian did all of that in 1 year. Texas has the money to bring people on. Texas has the money to find somebody. It's not necessarily the great answer, but I mean, if you also had a reason to believe that maybe Tom Herman didn't need to be fired after a 7-3 season. He had a really big recruiting class that had come in, and they still decided, hey, we're going to pony up the $15 million to fire him, the extra $7 million to fire all the assistants, and we're still going to just hire Steve Sarkisian anyway. I absolutely believe that if Steve Sarkisian does not bring the results that Texas expects, and even if those results right now are a 7-5 season, no embarrassing losses, I absolutely believe that he will be not just on the hot seat, but I believe he would not make it out of year two.
His seat would literally be on fire. He would just be sitting on flames. You know, to me, the whole saga of going from Herman to Sarkisian, it just confirmed in my head that really no one stays up late to watch Pac-12 football, because Washington and USC fans were just kind of like, really, Texas? You know, I mean, no one watches our games out on the West Coast, because apparently no one in Texas did either. So. I think that was a good question, Mr. PJ, on that. And by the way, just I want to get back to you, Mr. PJ, if you want something else. But Thack, it looks like you were able to sort out the technical issues there. Did you have some parting thoughts you wanted to give on Mizzou?
Oh, no. I was literally, my parting thoughts were about to be following up on the question. I mean, PJ, he took the words right out of my mouth when he mentioned Steve Sarkisian. You know, I'm thinking, you know, that was, you guys basically hit all the points, but, you know, why not Tom Herman? He played pretty good. He's not playing 2006 Rose Bowl Texas football, but he went 5-0 in bowl games to get replaced by, pardon my French, an absolute moron, in my opinion. You know, I say save the money, bring Tom Herman back, see what he can do. That's it. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Mr. Peter. What do you think of that idea?
Sorry there. I mean, I don't know about bringing back Tom Herman. My question is, who would? I don't know about Tom Herman, but who would they go after were they to fire him?
Oh, that's in Texas, that really is a 10 to 20 or even higher billion-dollar question. You know,
I mean, are they going to go after Urban again? Like,
hey, he's available now. He's available now. I think when it comes down to it, I don't think anybody really thought Steve Sarkisian was originally going to be the guy to replace Tom Herman at Texas. It was a pretty bang-bang play between firing Tom Herman and announcing Steve Sarkisian. I think it's going to be kind of a similar deal of whoever they hire in next. I think it'll be, you know, either whoever is the new hot head coach, whoever is the hot new offensive coordinator, whoever is the hot new guy who is at Texas. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised. You know, Jeff Traylor has another fantastic season at UTSA. Maybe they end up being the G5 rep in terms of getting into a New Year's Six game. I could see them trying to make a big play for him. I could see other programs that end up having a really good season. And, you know, I think if we look back at last year, I don't think anybody would have bet money that LSU would have picked up Brian Kelly. I don't think anybody would have bet money that they would end up having Lincoln Riley leave Oklahoma to go to USC. I don't think anybody would have expected Mario Cristobal to leave Oregon for Miami. But I think just in this crazy world that we have right now with the college carousel, I think a lot of people blew a lot of their money in this last cycle, and you might be able to pick up some really good options in this upcoming cycle. So who that specific person is, I'm not sure I want to necessarily put money on anybody right now, but I feel very confident that if someone wants to pay a stupid amount of money for someone who's maybe not the best hire, that's what the University of Texas has been doing for a decade now at this point.
JD, I couldn't agree more. I was thinking about some of the things you were saying as you were saying them. I think hell freezes over and they bring Mac Brown back before they go back to Tom Herman, just because, if nothing else, the pride and the ego they have over there in Austin. Again, nothing personal. But, yeah, I think that just, yeah, if you look at how nervous Texas football must be right now, I wouldn't be surprised, like, who they brought in, you know, should Sarkisian go and not do what he's expected to.
Hey, Harry, it looks like we have another Harry who wants to come on. And I think just add, we're going to try and wrap up with you, Harry. Give us some final thoughts. I have a feeling we're going to be wanting to talk on the topic we're on right now.
Yeah. Oh yeah, for sure. You know, one dark horse that is just really there he's already on campus. And he said it himself, even when he was at said school and he was matched up against my beloved Oklahoma Sooners, who I love to death. And he said, that's probably one of the hardest teams that I have to defend against. And that's because not only was he at TCU, which is a less significant school, and that's not a diss on anything, that's just how it is. They're not going to get 5-star recruits. They're not going to get 4-star recruits. They're not going to get 5-star recruits. But let me tell you, if Gary Patterson were to be promoted to head coach, and I know that's a long shot.
Yes.
But you get him that job, you get him players that he can get 4- and 5-star recruits. I don't know, guys. Now, given that you'd have to go into the SEC and can't even win in the SEC, that's one thing too. But if they were just going to stay here in the Big 12, he knows how to recruit. He knows that area. And don't tell me he can't get five-star recruits. That the Evans kid was a five-star recruit. He was, remember, because he was supposed to go to Georgia. I guess he's at Ole Miss now, I think. But
yes, you're thinking of Zach Evans. So first and foremost, so I did my undergrad at TCU. My freshman year was the year that we won the Rose Bowl. So I am intimately familiar with Gary Patterson and his style of coaching when it came to his long TCU run. I will tell you this first and foremost, the Gary Patterson of 2022 is not the Gary Patterson who won the Rose Bowl, who was right outside the door of the college football playoff. And the game that exists now is not the game that Gary Patterson can run as a head coach, but I 100% can see him as the interim head coach if they decide to move on from Steve Sarkisian, which, again, I will absolutely state if they get blown out and walloped by Oklahoma, if they lose an embarrassing game to, say, a Kansas, or they get just a walloping game against a Texas Tech, or, you know, Alabama is going to play them early in the season. If we see something like Nick Saban has to call off the dogs because they're up 63-10, Steve Sarkisian might not be making it to the end of the season. And Gary Patterson, I think, absolutely would be the interim for the rest of that year. But when it comes to handling boosters, when it comes to handling the media pressure of a huge program like UT, when it comes to dealing with NIL, when it comes to coming with transfer portals, that is something that Gary Patterson is not equipped to do. But I could absolutely see Gary Patterson comes in. He's just coaching X's and O's for the rest of the year. He somehow gets them on a 5-1 win. They win a Houston Bowl, and then they end up giving him a 3-year contract. I could absolutely see that in the cards for the University of Texas.
You know, if we're going to pick a team that would suddenly cause uproar in Texas early on, it would be somehow UTSA managing to pull that upset in Austin. That would be my vote for the wildest potential unexpected twist to all of it, but not so wildly unexpected than, like, I mean, to start off with ULM, I don't expect ULM to put up that much of a fight, but if UTSA, they're a strong enough team that wouldn't be out of the complete, you know, it would still be out of left field, but it wouldn't be, you know, coming from off planet. But looks like we've wrapped up about an hour. We're going to go ahead and call this one. And we want to thank all of you for joining us here for our CFB Talk 38. We always enjoy hearing from you. And if you didn't get a chance to hear that interview we did yesterday morning with Coach Shane Beamer of South Carolina, we've got that sticky to the top of our Twitter account. You can listen to the recording. Otherwise, we want to thank all of you. We hope you have a great rest of your week. It is fun. It's off season still, but we're getting week by week closer to the season. Hopefully we'll have some more crazy things happen in the upcoming week before we get back here next Tuesday night. So thanks, everyone. Have a great